This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is unbelievable. Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That right there, I'm looking at him through technology. It is Barrett Salee. You read him on CBSSports.com. You see him on CBS Sports HQ. You hear him here on the Cover 3 Podcast and on SiriusXM. I am merely Chip Patterson. So, Barrett, how are you doing,
Chip,
my man?
Chip Patterson.
Yeah, I'm merely Chip Patterson. How are we doing, man?
I'm good, man. Excited. It feels weird in mid to late August being excited about an actual game week. I mean, you know, in this week in the past, you know, it's kind of like, all right, you know, we get, you know, a Cal Hawaii game in Australia, or, you know, Colorado State versus whoever. But I mean, I am pumped. I mean, pumped about Miami, Florida. And then I'm even more pumped, to be honest with you, about watching Arizona go out to the island, because I can't wait to watch that Arizona team.
We're going to be getting into Khalil Tate with Kevin Sumlin again here in a little bit. And as well as some of our other thoughts, we've been pounding out expert picks. If you enjoy the takes going into the season, then head on over to CBSSports.com, because we're going conference by conference. I mean, we've got to do bold predictions. We've got to do overrated, underrated. So we'll get to that a little bit. But let's start right there with Miami, Florida, because it is no Stanford Rice. It is no Colorado State, Oregon State. These are two teams that both it's somewhere in the mindset of both the fan base and the locker room, you know, they are fancying themselves to be contenders within their own division at a minimum. Miami in the ACC Coastal and Florida in the SEC East. You are going to be in Orlando for CBS Sports HQ in Camping World Stadium for this kickoff. So from the perspective of the storylines that are running for each team, I want to start with Dan Mullen, because he is a coach who I have always thought, because of his, you know, his pedigree and, you know, the rhythms of everything, listening to some of his comments through fall camp, he's definitely been thrown off by the week zero start. Like, he came out on August 6th and he was like, man, I can't even believe this. This is practice day 11? Can't believe it. Like, he's definitely been a little bit shaken by it. But this Florida program in general, do you think that it is a group that we are going to see the best Gators team? Like, are they going to be able to hit the ground running on August 24th and show what might be a group that can contend in the SEC East?
I don't think you're going to see it on Saturday, no matter what happens, right?
Because win or lose.
Win or lose, sloppy or pretty. Just take it for what it is. And we've done this in the past on these early games, right? I mean, 3 years ago, Charlie Strong's last season at Texas, by God, Texas was back after throttling Notre Dame. Well, Charlie Strong got fired, Notre Dame went 4-8. So let's not cast aspersions as to what the win or the loss means for either team. With that said, for Florida, I think you should take at least something out of it if the offensive line plays well, because they've got four new starters up there. And I think when you saw Felipe Franks sort of come of age last year, a lot of that was due to the offensive line. And you know, they had some stars, Ivy Taylor and a lot of those guys who had played a ton together, really help him come back after getting benched for what, a day and a half between the Missouri and South Carolina games.
Yeah.
You know, so if that group can can protect Franks, open up holes for LaMichael Perine against a really good Miami front seven. I think that's something that you should take away with Florida and say, all right, look, we don't know if they're contenders yet, but the fact that they at least looked like they solved their problem in game one against a good defense is something to be excited about. And I think here's the thing with Florida. Because of the offensive line and the fact that it is relative, like pretty much all new, I think they'll have moments where they dominate because they're talented. They'll also have moments where you look around and go, guys, what the hell are you doing?
Right.
Right. Like, I think the ceiling for Florida can still be really high. I think they can run with the big boys at times. But I think when they have bad days, and we saw this last year against Missouri, when they have bad days, they're going to be bad. And so I think they're going to be volatile. Even if they do play well against Miami, I think you just take it for what it is, a win over Miami. And if there's something to be excited about the offensive line, if they give you a reason to be hopeful, then okay, then there's a reason to be cautiously optimistic.
Do you put, like, is Felipe Franks' success in your mind almost a directly linked to the play of the offensive line? Because there is the, like, will Felipe Franks be Felipe Franks' worst enemy? I think that we have seen enough from the from his own sort of displays of discipline or lack thereof. And I think we've also kind of heard from Dan Mullen, who seems to admit, he's like, yeah, I mean, we all know he's got a massive arm. It's just a matter of, you know, is he going to be able to go out there in an offense that is based so much on execution and so much on making the right decisions. I mean, there's really, really good playmakers. You mentioned LaMichael Perine. The wide receiver room is good. Like, there are enough pieces that if I was playing with a RIP NCAA football, like if I was playing with the Gators on NCAA football and I was controlling Florida based on all of Felipe Franks' video game skills, you should be going out there and being able to put up 42 points a game. And yet there is still that last bit of execution. Where's your confidence in Felipe Franks and his own maturity at this point?
That's a big question, and not to dodge it, I have no idea.
Right, no, dodging. That is what we're waiting, like, we are excited to see it, absolutely.
Right, like, you know, Felipe Franks has only had, what, maybe three games, really. He looked good against South Carolina, looked good against Florida State, and looked good against Michigan. Okay, I mean, that's nice, you know, good for him, but, you know, was that just him sort of catching lightning in a bottle down the stretch? Was it him being, you know, motivated and, you know, taunting his own fans after they booed him? And did that drive him? Or was it really Felipe Franks, you know, coming of age? Because, like, look, I mean, you know this too. He didn't get coached in high school.
Right.
Like, he was raw. And he was a project. And Jim McElwain knew that. And, you know, it could be that maybe he, you know, figured it out and his skill set now matches, you know, what Dan Mullen wants him to do within the offense. But, you know, I think, yeah, it probably does have a lot to do with the offensive line. Cause if you expect him to play like he did against Michigan and like he did against Florida State and South Carolina with a rebuilt offensive line, I don't know if that's going to happen. So, I mean, it's all on Franks. I think the kids probably, for, in terms of skills, you know, equal with Kellen Mond as the third most skilled quarterback in the SEC.
Mm.
But that doesn't mean he's going to have the third best season.
Right.
Because he could, like, honestly, we've seen it in the past. Between his ears, he's been volatile. He's been all over the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
What happens when he gets sacked four times because his offensive line can't block? You know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like not to draw, you know, make fun of my own baseball team, but it's like Mike Foltynewicz pitching. Like, he just starts getting pouty and you're like, dude, get your stuff together, man. Come on.
Chop on. All right, what about when we've got this year's Florida defense under Todd Grantham? Like, Todd Grantham, because he's such a character himself, and because he has with him the reputation of the aggressive scheme and always trying to, you know, get after it and get after the quarterback, there are some really, really talented pieces along this Florida defensive line. I think that, you know, we've certainly got a couple of superstars in the secondary, though there is maybe a little bit of some depth concerns at a couple places. Like, is that group defensively a group that you would consider, let's say, top half in the SEC? Not the SEC East, top half in the whole SEC.
Top half in the SEC, yeah. Maybe towards the bottom of the top half of the SEC. I mean, when you look at that group, right, you got Auburn, you got LSU, you got, you know, Georgia, you got I think those three you kind of, you know, write in ink. After that, I'm not sure you have anybody you actually trust. Maybe Texas A&M, because, you know, they were solid last year against the run, even though they lost some folks. They still have Justin Madjabwike up front. So, top half of the SEC, sure. You know, I think it's all – the biggest thing is finding, you know, finding a way to get consistent pass rush, like Ja'Kai Polite got last year. I mean, Jabari Zuniga seems like he's been there forever.
I know.
And, you know, so I think you trust him. You trust, you know, a couple of the guys in the middle, like David Reese. I think the problem could come, like you mentioned, the secondary. Like, getting Marco Wilson back is a big deal. You know, that sort of has flown under the radar this year, that you get a guy like Marco Wilson back with C.J. Henderson. The problem is, if those guys get banged up, then you're going to need an excellent, consistent pass rush to sort of make up for a thin and inexperienced secondary. I think they can be solid, but with a group like that, they don't have a ton of depth.
Yeah.
And the guys they have backing them up, you know, it's kind of gone like Dan Mullen's, you know, recruiting at Mississippi State's gone. You know, some pretty solid 4-star kids, some 3-star kids, you know, maybe a star here and there, but you're kind of counting on coaching those guys up. And at Florida, this year anyway, I don't know if you have that luxury, considering the depth issues they have. I was down on Grantham when he got hired by Georgia, and slowly but surely he started to convince me that he's actually good at coaching college football, because I did think he was an NFL coordinator, and what he asked Georgia players to do, you know, 10 years ago, I mean, you could see it in through their helmets, their head spinning. It was like, dude, we're not NFL players.
Right.
Like, we are student athletes, and yeah, you can try to bend the rules, but we only do get 20 hours with you every single week.
73 active scholarship players on this Florida team, because we've had a lot of exits from the 2019 class. Obviously, Chris, you know, in the secondary, Chris Steele, that's going to be the one that sort of stands out among the others. Like, that's like, how do you, like, because there's the culture angle, right? Like, didn't homeboy Mike Bianchi try to columnize it up a little bit?
But of course he did.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But because there's the culture angle where the argument's being made. It's like, well, you know, now they're taking a new policy about some of these off field issues. You know, like a zero tolerance. It just doesn't happen on everyone's schedule. That's like, if you are trying to change some of the reputation that has maybe still been brewing from Urban Meyer when Dan Mullen was there as an offensive coordinator. Like, there is the cultural angle to this. There's also just the sheer numbers that now we are at a position where, is that a fault of the coaching staff in the recruiting process to be able to identify these potential warning signs? Or do you think that this is just a one-off scenario where, because independent things A, B, C, D, and E happened, it's left Florida with a big-time depth issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think you always have to wonder, okay, do you just have a couple of bad people doing bad things?
Right.
Right, because in any organization, corporation, you know, whatever, you're going to have some people who just do dumb things. And there's not much you can do as a coach or a CEO or whatever to fix that, unfortunately. The thing with this, Chip, is Dan Mullen capable of fixing this? Because, I mean, you look at what he did at Mississippi State. I mean, the Jeffrey Simmons thing was huge. Like, that was one of the biggest scandals of the offseason, what, 3 or 4 years ago?
Right.
And he didn't handle it well. And I remember specifically sitting in a room at SEC Media Days, and Kyle Tucker, who now works at The Athletic, just basically grilled Dan Mullen on, you know, if he would allow Jeffrey Simmons to date his daughter. Which, I mean, was totally a gotcha question, right? But
yeah.
I mean, but Dan doesn't handle it well.
Yeah.
I mean, and we've seen that in press conferences where, you know, not just at Florida, but at Mississippi State, he just kind of, he's really overly defensive. And I think part of that might stem from the fact that he doesn't know how to handle it and handle off the field issues. So I do think it's left over from the McElwain era. I mean, that was as fractured as you could possibly make a program. But, and I do think part of it is, you know, individuals doing individually stupid things.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that Dan can't, doesn't need to fix it. I mean, he has to fix it. I think the frustration that he has, to me anyway, comes off like he doesn't know how to, and I don't think he knows how to. So that's not to say that he can't fix it. I think he, you know, it's possible, and recruiting the right guys is certainly a way to do that. But it's other coaches would have fixed it a lot quicker.
Yeah,
and I don't think that that Dan has figured that part out yet, and it's got to change. I mean, from a numbers perspective, you know, it's clearly hurt them from a football perspective. I mean, there's no questioning that. And then from a program sustainability standpoint, like if you're a parent and Dan Mullen comes knocking and you have not just this past off season, but maybe a couple more off seasons where similar things happen, maybe not to that extent, but you know, do you want to send your kids there? I don't know. I probably wouldn't.
Right, because the incredibly unfair and insensitive jokes when some of these allegations and the off-field issues started popping up in the Dan Mullen era was like, oh man, is Florida going to get back to winning national championships? You know, because they've got the off-field issues. It's Urban Meyer time, baby. Let's go.
right?
Yeah, but...
Start counting up those arrests. Doesn't matter what they are. Start counting them.
Doesn't matter what they are. But I've now, as we sit here, I've landed on the other side of this, you know, obviously dismissing the jokes for their insensitivity and the like, but also with the fact it's like, well, now we've got very real numbers issues, and very real numbers issues are going to be just massively, massively important when you're playing a schedule that this year is going to include Auburn in addition to LSU, in addition to Florida State and everyone else that comes on the regular Florida schedule, when depth is going to be so, so, so important. I just that has made me back off from probably, you know, maybe a will or a yearning to try and think that Georgia might get caught.
Existence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm like, all right, is it time for Florida to like close the gap a little bit? And as I'm trying to, you know, go through and tally up the wins and the losses, then, you know, late in the season, if it's a toss-up game, I'm probably sitting here in, you know, mid to late August, going to lean more towards the L's than the W's, just with the idea that they are like a couple injuries from being in big time trouble.
Yeah, they are. And even last year, though, I mean, you know, they were, you know, a Peach Bowl team, but I think they were in the Peach Bowl, and I think a lot of other teams were in this same boat. There were lack of options, right? Like, there were really no good teams last year outside of the top four or five teams in the country, and Florida was in that group behind them where, you know, they had massive problems. I mean, you got smoked by Missouri, and that wasn't a good Missouri team. You know, look, I'm sorry, I like Drew Locke and everything, but Missouri was not that good last year. And so, yeah, I'm kind of with you, and I'm, you know, we always pick our schedules and we go through everything, and I kind of feel the same way you do about Florida. You know, Miami getting out of the gate, I think they'll be fine. But that Auburn LSU stretch is tough. I mean, the cocktail party is the cocktail party, and you know, I would say, to me anyway, there's only one loss that I see written in ink, and that's Georgia, but there are about six or seven that are toss-ups.
Yeah.
You know, and so you kind of just have to wonder, okay, when you're picking those games, all right, which Florida are you going to get? Because, you know, I think you and I are in agreement, like they're going to be up and down. Like they're going to have moments where they just look like world beaters, and then they're going to get smoked by 25 points. And you just have to sort of pick your battles. And really, like last year, like there was no reason to pick them to get smoked by Missouri, but it happened. There was no reason to think, oh, they're going to come out gangbusters against LSU, but it happened. And that's like just they're unpredictable, and they're going to be all over the place. And I think the depth issue is a big reason why. And I mean, let's be honest, I think the SEC East is better than people realize. It was better than the West last year. The record bears that out. And I think this year You're going to have Tennessee be better. You're going to have South Carolina be really good, even though the record will not show it. They might even be a sub-500 team, but they're going to be the best sub-500 team in college football. So I just think Florida's going to – it's going to be tricky. It's going to be there are a lot of landmines for the Gators, and it starts with their own depth chart.
That that final run after the cocktail party where it's like they, I think they'll probably beat Vanderbilt, but those last two, it's like you go Missouri, week off, Florida State. Man, if I hope that Dan Mullen has that team uniquely motivated, because those right? those could be very, very interesting games. What is your sort of schedule? What's your record as you've sort of counted it out? What are you thinking for the Gators?
So, you know, every year we made our picks, and I always go through the helmet schedule and just draw a W or L in pencil, and then it spits out a record, and that's what I go with for predicted order of finish and playoff and all that other stuff. And I've got the Gators at 9-3 and 5-3 in conference. I have them beating Miami, beating Florida State, obviously. But then I have them losing that two-game stretch to Auburn and to LSU, and then losing to Georgia as well. And the reason is the offensive line. I mean, you're going to have ups and downs, but I know it's in the swamp, but you're going to ask an offensive line full of, you know, new starters in the middle of the season after playing four straight games, even though the game before is Towson, but you're going to ask those guys to block Derek Brown, Marlon Davidson, and Nick Coe and that crew. Sorry. and then the very next week, go to Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
What do you have them at?
I've got them as an 8-4 team with a potential, like it's either like a 8-4 team with an 8-4 record with a 9-3 team, or like a 7-5 team with a 7-5 record with an 8-4 team. Just
you, that sounds about right.
Yeah. You draw the worst potential sort of SEC West without straight up getting Bama. And then, like you mentioned, I'm looking at Tennessee, I'm looking at Missouri, and I think that both of those games, in addition to maybe even FSU, depending on sort of what the stakes are at that point in the season, sort of whatever the motivations are, I just think that there's a one potential place where they get tripped up along the way. If everything falls apart, if everybody's hurt and this team is being just held together by duct tape, I think the floor is 7-5. But I also think that 9-3, like you mentioned, I think that's my ceiling.
Yeah, I think that's fair, because, you know, there are a lot of losable games. They could lose to Tennessee. They could lose at Kentucky now. I think it's weird to say that after, you know, three decades, but they could lose to Kentucky early in the season. I mean, yeah, you know, that stretch, I mean, the tricky stretch, you know, Auburn at LSU and then at South Carolina. I think that South Carolina game is a little bit trickier than people realize because of the two games preceding it. But also the fact that that's the first defensive group, the first front seven, that really is Will Muschamp's front seven. You know, like it's a really solid group. Muschamp picked them out, handpicked. He's 4 years in now. And getting the Gamecocks in Columbia after that two-game stretch is probably the worst time to get them there.
Do you? All right, I apologize. I didn't include this, but since you brought it up, I've got zero feel for South Carolina this year. Where are you at with the Gamecocks?
I do too. I said they're the best 5-7 team in college football. I really think they're going to be a 5-7 team. But I mean, I think
it's not their fault.
It isn't their fault, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you have Alabama out of the West. You have Texas A&M out of the West every year. Those are the two best teams in the SEC West, like bar none. Nice. I think they're the two best teams in the SEC West, and I don't even think it's close. And you have Clemson. Plus, I mean, not to say North Carolina is good, but it's still a rivalry game right out of the gate at the start of the season. I mean, you got to go to Missouri after playing Alabama, and teams that play Alabama typically are dreadful the next week. Even though I don't think a ton of Missouri, that's still, you know, not that exciting. But then you have at Georgia, Florida, at Tennessee. How difficult, like, that is. You couldn't draw up a more difficult schedule.
I'm giving South Carolina the W in the opener for all of the Will Muschamp coach in waiting versus Mac Brown reasons.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
We're taking this back to reasons why he left Austin after breaking boards and everything else. I think it's a uniquely motivated Will Muschamp going up against Mac Brown in that moment. But
I love it.
All right. So the Hurricanes with Manny Diaz. Let's start with Jaren Williams being named starting quarterback. He beats out Tate Martell and Nikosi Perry. What was your read on that decision, and do you think the quarterback battle is over?
I do think the quarterback battle is over. My read on it was a little surprised that they didn't start Tate Martell just because of everything that sort of went into the offseason. But I wasn't surprised that Jaren Williams was the guy that they have the most trust in. Nikosi Perry doesn't do what they want to do. Like, he just doesn't.
You mean take care of the ball, not turn the ball over? Like, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he loves to do what the defense wants to do.
Exactly. And Martell, I don't know how good he is. No one knows how good he is. But, I mean, I remember people talking about Jaren Williams in high school, and it's not like he's just some random dude they picked up off South Beach. I mean, he was a highly recruited kid out of Metro Atlanta. He, I think fits what they want to do better than the other two guys. So I kind of went into the summer thinking they're going to start Tate Martell, but Jaren Williams probably is going to get a ton of snaps, and by the end of the season probably would be the starter. So, this idea, and I saw the line dropped like a point and a half it rose by a point and a half when Jaren Williams was named starter, and I was like, okay, that's just because name value.
Yes.
Because I think they're better because with Jaren Williams. And so it has come back down. I think it's at 7.5 now. So I think they'll be okay. I think, sort of like Florida, the offensive line is sort of a question. But, I mean, they've got dudes. They've got weapons. KJ Osborne was good at Buffalo as a receiver. Jeff Thomas has been solid. TJ Dallas has been there for a decade at wide receiver and running back, and now he's a full-time running back. And they've got guys, and it's not like what they're going to ask Jaren Williams to do is going to be too much. I mean, I think the defense should keep them in a ton of games. And so, like you said, Nikosi Perry didn't take care of the ball. If Jaren Williams can do that, I think they'll be okay. And man, you look at that schedule. If they get by Florida, who's beating them?
Do you, I don't have it pulled up right now. I've got Miami as my Coastal Division champion.
I do too.
Yeah.
10-2. Losing this weekend, but 10-2.
Miss me. Like, I was driving the Bronco bully ball. Virginia is like, let's praise Bronco Mendenhall, because this is the work that he did to make them being from like a lowly bottom dweller in the ACC to being two overtime losses away from playing for the ACC championship. That is good. That is commendable. You did it with a full BYU staff, and y'all went from Provo to Utah. You moved all your farm animals to Charlottesville, Virginia, and you still figured it out. That's awesome. Congratulations, Bronco. But like, whoa now. I'm no longer on board with the idea that like they are far and away the best team in the Coastal Division for some of the reason that you just mentioned. And like, let me throw Brevin Jordan tight end onto that, and then like the entire defense from Shaq Quarterman, McLeod, like Zach Pinkney, like there is elite talent on the defensive side of the ball.
Jonathan Garvin was a first team All ACC, right?
Yes. Like I and also props to you for getting that Jaren Williams Metro Atlanta knowledge out here, because about the only people that I've been talking to are you and Barton, and because Barton knows it from the recruiting side of things, where 24/7 was actually much higher on Jaren Williams than Scout or Rivals. Mm-hmm. So in the 24/7 sports composite, he had one ranking, but in the 24/7 sports ranking, he was actually, I think, maybe higher than Tate Martell. So the idea that he would beat Tate Martell out for a job shouldn't be that stunning. It's just the fact that, like you mentioned, a lot of this general public and a lot of the Joes that probably ran to the window the second that Tate Martell was not announced the starter, be like, oh, who's Jaren Williams? That must mean that Miami's offense is going to stink. That's completely ignoring the fact that he is just as highly rated of a prospect coming out of high school.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, it's the Netflix effect, right? Like, oh, I saw Tate Martell on this show with Jake Fromm, and so Tate Martell must be incredible. That's not how any of that works, Joe Schmo off the street.
Is that the QB1?
Yes, I started watching. We started watching QB1 again the first season, last night actually, just because I had forgotten about, you know, what went on with Jake Fromm and Tate Martell's, you know, overbearing parents, and I just wanted to see it again. I remember watching it the when it came out, and you know, it was interesting. But after all that's happened with, you know, Jake Fromm leading Georgia to a national championship game as a freshman and Tate Martell, you know, being all over the place mentally, I wanted to sort of get back and say, okay, was there any reason to think that this is going to happen on the TV show? Because there might have been.
There has been some signs, at least on the Martell side, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, his dad's a little aggressive.
But hey,
in terms of his football career.
Like, I mean, I don't have a chalkboard here for the listeners, but if they get in a goal line package and it's Tate Martell in the shotgun and speedy Jeff Thomas, you know, coming across with an option to do like a little jet sweep, fly sweep, or Tate Martell run, like that is terrifying for a group of linebackers to try and figure out where you need to be.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a really solid group that, I mean, look, I think it's again, you're not asking them to do an awful lot. And I think that's the key for them, is to make sure that the ask is pretty low and then the reward might be pretty high.
What do you have a final score or at least a general feel for what we're going to be looking at in that game?
I picked for Sportsline subscribers. It's up on Sportsline.
Oh, do you have a promo
Andy
code?
Over-under.
Give them that promo code.
I do, actually.
Yeah.
It's Sallee. And yours is Patterson, and that's easy to spell.
Do I have a promo code?
I think you do.
Oh, nice.
All of us have promo codes.
Am I picking, or is it just a promo code? Oh, this is a race.
I think it's just a promo. No, it's a promo code. What do we get? We get like Amazon gift cards or something?
I don't know what you're talking about. We do all this out of the goodness of our hearts.
Oh, you're right, because we're nice people.
Because we're nice people, supposedly.
And we love the listeners and
allegedly.
Love the viewers and readers.
Yeah, let me sprinkle all the allegedlies out here that we need.
Right.
Yeah, so what's so promo code Sallee, sign up for Sportsline, sportsline.com, first month for $1, and then all of the picks that you need. Barrett will be a picking expert on there, right?
I wasn't last year. I was if you were a subscriber last year, the strategy was to fade the hell out of me. But 2 years ago, I was money. So those things tend to average out. No, I think it's going to be super sloppy, man. I think Miami's going to keep it within a touchdown. And I think it's 7.5 now. I'm thinking like 21-17, 24-20. I just think it's, you're going to have a big play here or there, but you're not going to see like massive sustained 8-10 play drives. I think you're going to see pretty ugly football with a big play mixed in here and there, and that's it. I just hope that the college football world doesn't sour on both of those teams when they watch it, because that's kind of what, I mean, I don't know. That's the kind of game I think it should be based on who they are. And, you know, the casual fan tuning in that, you know, doesn't really know an awful lot about either team might be expecting like the Spurrier Florida team versus the old U. And that's the exact opposite of what I expect.
The play might. And yes, I think that I've been throwing out 23-13 as my general score. I am pretty much in lockstep with you there. I just imagine that for all the reasons that we have talked about so far here today about how grueling Florida's schedule is and their depth issues and all the pitfalls, I just imagine like Dan Mullen gets an early lead and then he's like, cool, and just sits on it the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Like, let's run LaMichael Perine. Like, let's try to make sure that we put Miami in a position where every single drive, if they're going to score a touchdown, they've got to go 85 yards. And
yeah.
I don't think Miami's offense is ready to put up a bunch of 85-yard drives against Florida's defense at this point in the season.
Exactly. And honestly, that's the right thing to do. You know, if you're Dan Mullen and you see, even though I think both of us, and I know Barton does too, likes Jaren Williams a lot. You know, we all, you know, I seem to think that he's going to be one of the better quarterbacks in the ACC by season's end, he's not right now. And if you're Florida and you start to shut him down early, yeah, just sit on the football, be done with it, get out of there. I mean, you have time after that, you know, to figure things out. So, yeah, it's, I think if it goes over the 47.5, I'd be shocked.
Agreed. Coming up on the other side, getting into Khalil Tate, Kevin Sumlin, Arizona, Hawaii, and what have we felt the most backlash about from our overrated, underrated, from our expert picks next.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it up.
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I feel it in my soul. I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe.
I'm a survivor.
I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
So this is really exciting if you are an Arizona football fan, and it is exciting because not only was it a year one with Kevin Sumlin, who was hired, by the way, 50 days after Chip Kelly, same hiring cycle, but because Rich Rodriguez dismissed amidst scandal a little bit later in the hiring cycle, Kevin Sumlin is introduced 50 days behind Chip Kelly. He's got a quick rush for signing day. He's got a quick rush to put in his spring practice plan. And so not only did he have the schedule-based limitations, but also Khalil Tate, who was a superstar for about a month and a half back in the 2017 season. He's also playing most of 2018 with a bum ankle. I've been hearing the murmurs. I've been feeling the reverberations in North Carolina all the way from Tucson. There seems to be a growing belief around that program that Khalil Tate, fully healthy with another year, could be about to have a big-time season.
I think he will. I mean, I really do. And here's the thing. Khalil Tate, you know, he came in last year as the Heisman darling, right? The guy who, you know, broke the FBS single game rushing record for quarterbacks. And you know, everybody just thought he was going to be this just unheralded superstar, this just monster. And it didn't happen. And it didn't happen not just because of the ankle injury, but he had a toe, he had a shoulder injury. He was all banged up, and I talked to Kevin Sumlin about this, and you know, he flat out said, you know, early in the or late in the BYU game and early in the Houston game, the first two games of the season, they lost both of those. You know, he was almost rendered to 60%. I mean, he wasn't there, and because of those losses and because he wasn't running for a mile and a half every game, like, everybody sort of forgot about him, right? Like, it was just like, okay, here's Khalil Tate, but, you know, he's a flop. He doesn't do anything. You know, he wants to develop as a passer,
mm-hmm.
and he threw for over 2,500 yards and 26 touchdowns last year with a bad ankle and a shoulder and a toe. Like, that's not bad. It's not bad at all. So, yeah, someone said, and this is, I don't necessarily think that this is an exaggeration, he says he's the fastest human being he's ever seen. Like, flat out said that. So
respect.
Yeah, right? I mean, I think
Sumlin's your man. I expect him to give it to you straight. That's your guy right
guy,
there.
Man.
Yeah, he is your guy.
The key to Sumlin, if you're ever talking to him, ask him about fishing in the Gulf.
Okay.
You ask him about fishing in the Gulf, he'll talk to you for an hour and a half.
And also he'll give you that real, like, Khalil Tate's one of the fastest human beings he's ever seen.
Right. he's also an aerospace engineer. He's going to build you a rocket, and then he's going to outrun the rocket to the moon.
Wait.
That's how fast he is.
Khalil Tate's an aerospace engineer?
No.
Oh, okay. I was about to get the Josh Dobbs.
Is he Joshua
vibes.
Dobbs?
Yeah.
No, I can't wait to watch Arizona. Like, I'm so fascinated because if Tate's healthy, he proved he can pass last year. Nobody saw it. Obviously, we know he can run, and they've got speed. I mean, they've got a ton of JJ Taylor is one of the faster players in the country too. And it just so happens that he's in the same backfield as Khalil Tate. So, I mean, if Tate stays healthy, man, I think that Arizona can be that team in the South where, you know, you don't necessarily look at them like, you know, a national championship contender. But, you know, we turn the book to a calendar to November. We're looking around going, okay, maybe Arizona's a lot more than we thought they were.
All right,
I think they're going to get a couple teams.
All right, I agree with you. Arizona is one of many teams that I think is not to be overlooked in 2019 in the Pac-12. And I think that sort of middle tier is loaded. Like, there's not... I am, even though I love LaVisca Chenault and I believe that Mel Tucker will have a Colorado team that will hit, as he said, and be really, really aggressive defensively. I will put them in the bottom tier. I will continue to keep Oregon State there. But after that, man, I don't know if there's a single gimme. So what is the ceiling for Arizona? How many of those toss-up games against the other middle teams do you think the Wildcats will end up winning?
I think they're going to win a ton. I mean, I think they're going to upset Washington, which I didn't. I mean, look, Washington's got – and here's why. Listen to Washington's three games before they play at Arizona, okay? At BYU, home versus USC, at Stanford. That's not easy.
No. That BYU,
it's really not.
That BYU game is terrifying. I love the start to BYU's schedule. Because,
oh, so good,
I mean, if you're Kalani Sitake, what better to have in terms of motivation during fall camp than those first six games?
Oh, man. There's nothing better. I mean, it's fantastic. And, I mean, I can't wait to watch BYU-USC. Like, that's going to be so much fun. Because, I mean, think about all the pressure on Clay Helton after what happens with Fresno State, win or lose. Like, that's gonna be awesome. So,
you mention my beloved Trojans? My beloved Trojans.
Do they play BYU?
No. You're just.
Oh, saying, no. Oh, no. So USC. I thought you were talking about Troy. I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. USC. Yeah. Like, what about your USC love, man?
Yeah. It's eight. It was a take that I dug myself in right there with you. we were side by side in Fort Lauderdale when I put my flag in the ground. I spoke it, and now I'm. What is it? Almost a month later, I'm just still talking it. It's like that. It's like that in Oklahoma national champions. It's like that's the other one where it's like, well, I said it, so I guess I gotta
go with it now.
Gotta go with it now. Do you think that Arizona? They're playing Hawaii in that first game. Spreads 11.5. Over unders like around 70, 71. What kind of performance are you expecting out the gate? Do you think it will be similarly sloppy?
I don't think it'll be sloppy. I think Arizona's going to come out firing. I mean, I think that offense will force Cole McDonald to kind of go score for score. And I just think that I love Cole. I mean, we all loved him, especially last September. Can he go score for score with Khalil Tate? My gut is no. And so I think it's going to be one of those games. Do you remember it was Ohio State, Indiana? To open the 2017 season?
On a Thursday night.
On a Thursday night?
Yep.
Was that Ohio State, Indiana? And Indiana was hanging with them for a while, right? Like, mm-hmm. they were sort of in it for a little while. Third quarter comes around. You're like, all right, this is interesting-ish. And then Ohio State wins by 30 or something, you know? It might be something like that where Hawaii, you know, hangs around for a little while and you're excited about the Rainbow Warriors and Cole McDonald's doing great, and he's one of the future stars of the sport, and then things get incredibly sideways, and we're done. Like, I think that's going to be kind of how it goes. I mean, is there anybody on Hawaii's defense? Honestly, I'll be honest, I'm not the biggest Hawaii Rainbow Warriors expert in the world. Really not. But is there anybody in that defense that's faster than J.J. Taylor and Khalil Tate?
I would not bet so. I would right. Absolutely not be wagering on that at all. And I'm glad you mentioned that, by the way. For this wrinkle, It was exactly as you remembered, because Ohio State ended up winning that game 49-21. It was on a Thursday night, first week of the season, and I do remember it being close. Everyone's a little bit like, uh-oh, what does this mean? And a lot of it was because Ohio State was in a big-time look-ahead spot for the next week when they were going to be hosting Oklahoma, when Baker Mayfield won that game and planted the flag.
That's right. And so, yeah, I think it's going to be something like that. I just, you know, I think Kevin Sumlin, you know, he's my boy and all, and I'm not saying this because he's my boy, but he's smart enough to know, hey, you know what? If things start to get sideways against Hawaii, just hand it to Khalil Tate and J.J. Taylor and be done with it.
100%.
Like it's not like this is a super complicated sport sometimes.
No.
It's like Occam's razor. Sometimes the simplest solution is the right one.
All right. So as we've been rolling out all these overrateds and underrateds, has there been any one take that you feel like you've started to receive unique blowback from?
Miami folks were not happy that I picked them to lose to Virginia, but I picked them to win the Coastal. So I don't know if they just were looking for things to yell at and be mad at online, which might be the case.
True.
I mean, UCF Twitter is UCF Twitter. I mean, I picked USF to win that division and said that UCF was overrated. And I mean, that's kind of one of those things where you pick it and you're like, yeah, okay, this is, I know it's coming, not a big deal. And quite honestly, UCF Twitter thinks it's a lot angrier and more impactful than it actually is. So those two, I guess, were the biggest so far. I did write that LSU was overrated because I tend to think LSU is overrated every year because they are overrated every single year to the point where even though they went to the Fiesta Bowl last year, they felt the need to sell this brand new offense all offseason, and the reason was because the other one didn't work so well. So LSU, like, no, but that, again, I'm sort of preconditioned for that. Like I know that LSU folks are going to come at me hot, and I'm ready for that smoke. That happens all the time.
You're like drawing your sword as all of the ninja army is charging your way.
Adam, our boss, hits publish, and I'm like, all right, let's go.
Let's go. I picked Cincinnati to win the AAC East. I am also of the belief that UCF is good. UCF is fine, but Brandon Wimbush is their quarterback more than likely, and that has had me sell some stock.
He's not very good.
He hadn't been great. But you have been great, Barrett, and I really appreciate it. You can follow Barrett on Twitter at Barrett Salee. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. He will be in Orlando for Miami, Florida. Watch on CBS Sports HQ for updates from the stadium throughout, before, during, after the game. Just basically the entire time. Look for Barrett. He's great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, dude. Anytime.